I'll call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order at 1:33 p.m. on Friday, March 6, 2026. Present today are Representative Stapp, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Co-Chair Shragi, and myself, Co-Chair Josephson. We had a big group of hockey aficionados from the Kenai-Soldan area, but they're already moving on to other important meetings, some of them anyway. We welcome them. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We're also we're joined online by Representative Tomaszewski and Representative Bynum. Is that right? Okay. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office with us. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we'll have our first hearing on House Finance Subcommittee closeout reports. The following closeout reports being presented today are for the Department of Law, Department of Health, Department of Family and Community Services, Department of Administration, Department of Corrections, and Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. In committee members' packets are agency budget action reports, wordage reports, and subcommittee narratives. Before we begin hearing closeout reports, I'd like to call my staff forward to walk through what those materials are and how to review them. Mr. Schroeder, would you please come forward, put yourself on the record, and walk through the closeout materials in committee members' packets.
Good afternoon, members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Alexander Schroeder, staff to Representative Josephson. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak generally about the subcommittee closeout materials. The chair believes it would be helpful for committee members and or the public to explain what the closeout documents before you are and how to review them. Over the next few committee hearings, House Finance Subcommittee closeout reports will be before the committee and presented by our hardworking and talented subcommittee aides. In committee members' packets will be subcommittee recommendations. The documents which communicate these recommendations are the agency budget or BA reports, also referred to as BA sheets, the wordage reports, and the subcommittee narratives. I'll start with the BA reports. On the first page of every agency BA report are agency totals, position counts, and version comparisons. The top left table divides the agency totals by fund source, reflected in the bolded rows as unrestricted general funds, designated general funds, other funds, federal receipts, and total funds. The table also divides the agency totals by the budget version, reflected in the bold columns as FY26 management plan, House Committee Substitute 1, or adjusted base, GovAmend, and House Subcommittee recommendations. When the subcommittee aides are presenting agency totals, usually they will be referencing the House Subcommittee recommendations column in this table. The top right table compares fund sources and percentage differences between budget versions. The rows are divided by fund source. The columns compare the FY26 management plan to House Subcommittee recommendations, House Committee Substitute 1 to House Subcommittee recommendations, and GovAmend to House Subcommittee recommendations. The FY26 Management Plan to House Subcommittee Recommendations column tells the reader the changes from the combined items in the adjusted base, governor's requests, and subcommittee modifications. The House Committee Substitute 1 to House Subcommittee Recommendations column tells the reader the changes from the combined governor's requests and subcommittee modifications. The GovAmend to House Subcommittee Recommendations column comparison tells the reader just the changes from subcommittee modifications. The bottom left table shows the total position counts in the agency reflected in the bolded rows as permanent full-time positions, permanent part-time positions, temporary positions, and total positions. The columns are divided by budget version. The bottom right table compares the position counts and percent changes between the budget versions. The rows are divided by position type. The columns are divided by bill version. Do members have any questions so far? The remaining pages of the BA reports include the budget action items. The item information is divided by columns in the following way. Starting on the left, the item number is organized numerically. These are the item numbers which will be referenced throughout the closeout reports and narratives. The second column is the appropriation and allocation within the department. The third column is the description of the item. The fourth column is the governor's request, including the amount of each fund source, the amount and type of new or deleted positions, and the transaction type. The fifth column is the House Subcommittee recommendations, including the amount of each fund source, the amount and type of new or deleted positions, and the transaction type. The last column contains nonpartisan Legislative Finance Division notes. If the information is identical in the Governor's Request column and the House Subcommittee column, it means that the Subcommittee recommends adopting the Governor's item without modification. If you see blue text across a row, it means that there was a change from the Governor's Request. Those changes could be one of the following. The Governor's item was not adopted, reflected as not applicable or N/A in the House Subcommittee column. The Governor's item was modified, or the Subcommittee added a new item, reflected as N/A in the Governor's Request column. That concludes my remarks on the BA reports. The second document in committee members' packets is the wordage report. The wordage report contains the following items approved by the Subcommittee. Conditional language, which has the force of law and applies to an agency, appropriation, or allocation. An intent language, which does not have the force of law, but is guidance on how the agency, appropriation, or allocation can meet a stated legislative goal. The third document in members' packets is the subcommittee narrative. The narrative consolidates the contents of the BA report and wordage report, and it provides detail and commentary on subcommittee actions, including what amendments were offered in subcommittee and justification for subcommittee changes to the governor's proposed budget. That concludes my remarks on the materials and committee members' packets that will be referenced during subcommittee closeout reports. I'm happy to try to answer any questions members may have.
Okay. I don't see any. And Mr. Schroeder, you're sitting in the right chair. We're going to start with the subcommittee that you helped close out, the Department of Law. Please begin your Department of Law closeout report.
Again, for the record, Alexander Schroeder, staff to Representative Josephson. In front of you is the Department of Law Finance Subcommittee closeout report. This report approves and recommends the House Finance Committee adopt five items requested by the governor. The first item is a decrement of $500,000 in interagency receipts in the Civil Division litigation allocation. The department reports that these receipts would be uncollectible in FY27. The second item is an increment of $10,600 in interagency receipts in the legal support services allocation. The Department of Administration conducted an information technology job classification study. These receipts are associated with the job classification change in this allocation. The third item is an increment of $6,100 in unrestricted general funds and $27,300 in interagency receipts for a total of $33,400 all funds to implement the IT classification study in the administrative services allocation. If you turn to the wordage report, there are two additional items. Both were added by the governor and are conditional language. The first one encompasses the Civil Division appropriation. The second one encompasses the special litigation and appeals allocation. Both are standard language for this department. No items were added by the subcommittee in this proposal. Compared to the adjusted base, the net result is an increase of $6,100 in unrestricted general funds and a decrease of $462,100 in other funds. That concludes my closeout report on the Department of Law. Thanks for your time.
All right. Mr. Schroeder, question from Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair, too. Mr. Schroeder, thanks for being here, as always. Young Alexander, I have a question here for you regarding the comparison to HCS1, the CS1 to the subcommittee version. So I see on the page 3, the administrative support services, in the line item on the BA sheet, it says $6.1 million in general funds, $23.1 in interagency receipts. I'm guessing that, and that so that total is in is that just in 33,000? Right? It just reflects a little differently than normal through the chair. 33,400.
Mr. Schroeder.
Apologies. One moment, please. Through the chair. Representative Staff, the 33.4 thousand is just the combined total of the $6,100 and the $27,300. For that item, the total is that amount.
And just quick follow up on that.
Yes, follow up, Representative Staff.
I'm just curious. Do we know what exactly it's the implementation, the IT classification study. But I mean, I've never seen an implementation only cost $33,000. So I guess I'm curious if we know what we're getting for that. If that's all it takes, I mean, that's exciting. But just curious.
I'm guessing, Mr. Schroeder, that you couldn't report that sort of detail on that sort of, not terribly attractive item. It could be that someone from Ledge Finance.
I don't think it's, okay, it's worthy of that, Mr. Kutcher. I'm just curious. It's a very relatively small amount of money compared to what we typically deal with. So that's all. Thanks.
Okay. With that, I want to thank Mr. Schroeder for his report today. Next up is the Department of Health closeout report. Dr. Aaron Page, if you'll come forward and take the seat that Mr. Schroeder had and begin your closeout report.
Hello, good afternoon. For the record, I'm Aaron Page, staff to Chair Josephson, and I'm here to provide an overview of the operating budget recommendations developed by the Health and Social Services Subcommittee, first for the Department of Health and second for the Department of Family and Community Services. In combination, the subcommittee narrative and underlying budget action report provide you with full detail on the subcommittee's recommendations and considerations, including precise figures. So I will not be going through every single one because health has almost 50. I will pull out a few key elements here and use round numbers to make it easier for those listening along without the reports in front of them. In contrast to most of the reports you'll hear, I'll speak in millions of dollars because most of the health action items reach that level. So to go through, I will let you know that I'll be broadly following the organization of the Department of Health narrative report, not reading from it, but that was broadly the order of the things that I'll be speaking about. So we will begin with the bottom line. Compared to the FY26 adjusted base, the Department of Health's overall budget increases by about $460 million, or 12.1%. Federal receipt authority for Medicaid drives about three-quarters of that increase. Unrestricted general fund appropriations to the department increase by $78 million, or 7.3%. More than half of this UGF increase comes from growing usage of Medicaid services, especially high acuity services, and two-thirds of it comes from governor actions. Positions are essentially unchanged compared to FY26. We'll now move to page 2 of the narrative for those of you who are reading along. Okay. Moving to the underlying budget actions and focusing on UGF impact, I'd like to call out a couple specifics around the governor's items. First, the first bullet, the decrement of $10 million UGF in rate adjustments for behavioral health providers, does not indicate a cut in behavioral health spending for FY27. As described in the narrative, behavioral health rates will be increased in alignment with the Guidehouse rate study recommendations that you heard about last month. The governor's supplemental bill authorizes unspent monies from FY26 to be available in FY27, and that will be sufficient to cover those rate increases. Next, as mentioned earlier, the $43 million UGF increase in Medicaid provider payments reflects an ongoing trend of increased usage of Medicaid services. Finally, the governor's actions also represent substantial investment in the infrastructure that supports nearly 20 state and federal public benefit programs, such as the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, Medicaid, and senior benefits. This investment includes $11.3 million UGF to cover technology upgrades and maintenance for the systems used to determine eligibility and award amounts, and $3.7 million, again UGF, for the virtual contact center. These two work areas focus on speeding up application and eligibility processing and eliminating application backlogs. All right, now I will move on to the subcommittee budget actions at the bottom of page 2 on the narrative. Because there are a number of items and they're small in relation to the actions described above, I won't go through all of them, though of course I'm happy to answer questions. In general, the actions included by the subcommittee support critical needs for people who live in poverty, those with disabilities, elders, and other vulnerable Alaskans. I would like to bring your attention to one of the smaller items, though, the $625,000 UGF increment to increase Medicaid rates paid to private duty nurses. By bringing more private duty nurses, or PDNs, into the workforce, patients with extremely complex but not acute health issues are able to return home rather than stay in an acute care facility. Based on current patient counts, the conservative estimate of the UGF savings in Medicaid spending for this $625,000 a year is $84,000 a day, or $30 million in a year. This concludes my prepared remarks on the Department of Health. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Staff.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair. Thanks for being here. So just trying to compare the current CS that the committee adopted to the changes in subcommittee. Mm-hmm. Looks to me that there's $77.924 million in general fund additions and $382.9 million in, I would imagine, federal receipt authority. And mm-hmm. I guess my only question is going to be, we are positive that all of the additional federal receipt authority would be approved through CMS and it's not hollow authority.
That is our, through the chair, Representative Stapp, that's our understanding. All of the rate increases and the Medicaid numbers are aligned with the Guidehouse study and the rates that it suggests, and CMS requirements were part of its guardrail.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Dr. Page on Department of Health narrative report? Yes, Representative Hannon for Dr. Page.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Dr. Page, just curious, the savings we're going to see, the private duty nursing increment, we'll see that in the following fiscal year in our nurse. Where will we see that in that budget?
We should see it, frankly, almost immediately through the chair, Representative Hannon, because while it may not accrue until the next fiscal year in terms of accounting, the daily costs for the 8 patients in the state who currently receive this complex care in hospitals is $84,000, more than $10,000 a person. As soon as there are private duty nurses who are available to go into the home, these are people who are already licensed and trained, so there's not much lag. The patient can also go home and immediately start receiving that 24-hour care. That still results in a significant decrease in Medicaid spending.
Follow-up.
Rep. Hannon. So we will see that in our Medicaid spend
yes.
allocation.
I'm
okay.
sorry. Yes,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I think Dr. Page is going to stay with us and talk about the next agency, the Department of Family and Community Services.
Yes.
Dr. Page.
Thank you. All right. Here for the Department of Family and Community Services, I'll again be reading through the narrative or reading down the narrative report in that order. And again, I'll focus on an overview of the subcommittee's actions. Here, the changes are small compared to those that we just discussed in health. Compared to the FY27 adjusted base, the overall budget falls by about $5 million or 1%. This decrease is almost wholly due to decreases in federal receipt authority across a number of areas, all of which are to align receipt authority within expected actual receipts. Again, detailed information is available in the budget action sheet and narrative. Overall, UGF appropriations to DFCS increased by about $3.2 million, or 1.1%. And compared to FY26, there are no changes in any position categories. The governor has 3 budget actions that affect UGF. 2 are small and implement salary changes as a result of the classification studies. The third, $474,000, reflects a transfer of grants from DOH. The grants relate to children and youth residential services, and DFCS and DOH jointly determine the grants aligned better with DFCS programs. The subcommittee has 4 budget actions that affect UGF. 2 from the chair's recommendation to the subcommittee, and 2 that came from committee member amendments. All actions are to allocations within the Office of Children's Services. The largest budget action is $1.5 million to children's advocacy centers within the Office of Children's Services. This increment offsets a $1.5 million cut in funding from the Victims of Crime Act, which had been granted to CACs through the Department of Public Safety. This is a different fund source than we heard of last year when the CACs were in front of the committee. The Victims of Crime Act funding had been granted to CACs through the Department of Public Safety. Decreases in this funding source resulted in DPS no longer allocating any Victims of Crime Act resources to the CACs, which results in a $1.5 million cut to those centers. All other subcommittee actions related to foster care and the challenges experienced in that area, which this committee heard about in some detail last Friday. The actions are intended to support OCS's efforts to comply with HB 151, the foster care bill, through workforce stabilization for case-carrying protection service specialists. An intent amendment also addresses the need to undertake and document comprehensive efforts to place foster children with family or friends. Again, happy to try to address any questions.
Okay. Rep Stapp for Dr. Page on DFCS narrative report.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Justin, through the chair to Dr. Page. Just tracking along with the CS changes to the subcommittee additions, tracking what looks like almost $3.2 million in general funds and a reduction in federal receipt authority and other funds that was explained in your narrative report. So I just want to verify that's what we're tracking.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Any other comments about that report? All right. So we are now, if there's no more questions for Dr. Page, we're going to now call up the Department of Administration aide, and that should be Caroline Hamp. Please come forward and put yourself on the record and begin your closeout report.
Good afternoon, House Finance Committee. I am Caroline Hamp, staff to Representative Schrage, here to walk through the subcommittee recommendations for the Department of Administration fiscal year 2027 budget. The total unrestricted general fund is $99,329,200. Designated general funds, $36,689,500. Designated general funds is $211,793,400. And federal funds, $1,321,500. For a total of $349,133,600. Compared to the House Committee Substitute 1 budget, which is also the equivalent of adjusted base in this particular department, the subcommittee recommends less than a 1% increase in all funds, which is primarily because of the IT classification study implementation. Compared to the governor's proposed budget, the subcommittee recommends a decrease of $567,700 in interagency receipts, which is because of the deletion of a vacant deputy commissioner position and the chief of operation position. Otherwise, the House Finance or the subcommittee agreed to and adopted all of the governor budget proposals, including the deconsolidation of shared services of Alaska to all agencies and returning payroll positions and functions to 7 agencies. Although there were no amendments or additions regarding the subcommittee discussion, there is a section on the back of the narrative report that talks about 3 topics that the subcommittee discussed at length and would like to make the full finance committee aware of. The first being DOA's noncompliance with intent language in FY26 regarding the Group Health and Life Fund. Currently, I'll start at last session. Last session, the intent language from the legislature was that the rate for the employer contribution to the Alaska Care Employee Health Plan for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2027 be based on the full actuarial rate without relying on lapsed funding. However, DOA and the Office of Management and Budget implemented a stair-stepped conservative approach to reduce the reliance on lapsing fund. And according to Legislative Finance Division, this reduced reliance still projects to use between $18.5 and $26.3 million in FY27. A second topic discussed by the committee, the subcommittee, was the importance of funding for public broadcasting, particularly for emergency and rural services, while still encouraging political neutrality in programming. And lastly, despite the fact that the subcommittee adopted the shared services deconsolidation, the subcommittee discussed the importance of the executive branch collecting data and information during this transition so that future administrations can adequately decide whether decentralization or centralization is appropriate, since we have done this fluctuation between back and forth a few times. Thank you.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Hamp on the DOA subcommittee work? Yes, Representative Stapp.
Yep, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair, and to Ms. Thank you for being here. Just same line of thought here, just looking at the changes from the CS1 to the subcommittee. Looks like it's just $148,200 in general fund changes. Is that correct, through the chair?
Ms. Hamp.
Yes, that is, through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hamp. We're moving swimmingly here. We're going to next come up to and call up the Department of Corrections aide. Ms. Meacham, I see you there. Please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your closeout.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Hunter Meacham, staff to Representative Hannon. I'm walking through the Department of Corrections closeout. The subcommittee report forwarded by Chair Hannon accepts the governor's requests without any increments or decrements, with a total budget of, $523,436,200. Some major budget items of note are $20 million increase in UGF for personal services and inmate transportation within the population management appropriation in the institution director's office allocation. Yesterday, the department went over that in extensive detail. And then another item is $3,100,000 increase in UGF for medical staff costs within the health and rehabilitation services appropriation physical health care allocation. Lastly, there's a $1.7 million increase to meet community residential center contractual obligations. In addition to these items, Representative Hannon's forwarding for consideration intent language relating to fully funding the community and regional jails program. I can read that if you'd like, or I believe you have it in front of you, but... with that, are there any questions?
I sort of read this quickly, Ms. Meacham, but it looks like the intent is that the Corrections Department will enter into contracts with the local community jails, figure out what they cost, and we should see a bump for those costs in FY28? So yes. That the imposition isn't there on the local governments?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair, to Ms. Meacham. Thanks for being here and all your hard work and subcommittee. So just continuing on, same line here. Looks like the change from the CS that was adopted by this committee to the subcommittee additions in general funds is $29.7 million, through the chair. Is that correct?
Ms. Meacham.
I believe that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. I guess I wanted to just clarify that the intent language on the community jails articulates what we haven't had is what the total cost is. So it's not necessarily implied that that will be incorporated into next year's budget, but for us to be able to adequately discuss and address it, we at least need to know what that total cost is.
Fair enough.
Representative Sharkey.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Thank you, Ms. Meacham, for being here. Just in terms of, for the public that's watching, I think it's sometimes confusing when we talk about the first committee substitute we've adopted to where we are now coming out of the subcommittees. The difference between that first committee substitute and where we are now would not only include work from the subcommittees, but also includes any additions presented by the administration. Is that correct? Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Meacham. Our last closeout report today is for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Mr. Tim Clark, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and tell us about that subcommittee's work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Clark, staff to Representative Hannon. The subcommittee report includes $119,505,300 in unrestricted general funds, $59,151,500 in designated general funds, $493,740,100 in other funds, and $5,607,500 in federal funds. That brings the total to $678,004,400. This represents a 0% change in funds between the subcommittee recommendation and the governor's amended proposal. Those totals, as compared to CS1, to the subcommittee closeout, is in the neighborhood of $156 million. Employees of the department includes under this budget 2,347 permanent full-time positions, 222 permanent part-time positions, and 92 temporary positions for a total of 2,661 positions. The subcommittee report accepts all budget items put forward by the administration with no additions. The administration's request included close to $400,000 in UGF, DGF, other funds, and federal funds to meet the costs of implementing the information technology employee classification study. These increases are necessary to bring compensation for these positions into professional parity. The governor also requested more than $7.9 million in UGF to restore reductions and reverse one-time funding sources included in the FY26 budget. This funding flows to highway and aviation maintenance and operations across many regions of the state. Without these restored resources, essential responsibilities of the department would be materially compromised. Note as well that these restorations are mitigated by more than $3.5 million in deleted positions relating to the departmental reorganization. Another feature of this budget is the transition of the Alaska Marine Highway System to multi-year funding. This was deemed prudent in large part because of the budgeting flexibility it will allow the system amid the worrisome uncertainty over vital federal grant programs. This action also moves AMHS from the numbers section of the bill to the language section. So while at first glance it may appear the agency is being cut from the budget, it is in fact only being moved within the budget. And that concludes my summary. I'd be happy to take any questions.
That would be a breaking news event, I would think, if it was wholly removed. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Coach Justin, through the chair. This is a bit tricky because basically, if I look at the BA sheet here, the change between the CS1 to the subcommittee, it looks like we're slashing DOT's budget by 33%, but you're basically just moving the entire marine highway system to the language section as far as the numbers section. So I guess my question is going to be, do you have any way to break out the general fund changes, excluding that item from the subcommittee adopted CS1 to the subcommittee version in terms of...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sepp, I'm not immediately able to do a breakout such as that for you.
Fault, Mr. Griffin.
Yes, follow. Representative Sepp for Mr. Clark.
Yeah, is there any, is the change from the adjusted base to the governor's request, do we know if the general funds went up or down? I just try to simplify it in that, taking into account the marine highway system through the chair.
Mr. Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question without going back and sifting through some of these items that are unrelated to the ferry system transfer.
Okay. I think that Mr. Is this Mr. Partlow's lane? He's available if you'd like to ask him. Okay.
Oh, I was just adding about myself, Mr. Co-Chair. It's fine.
Okay.
And that's it. Thanks.
Okay. All right. For those watching online, there are a number of legislators not in the building today, and so it's a sort of more casual kind of day. We were really in need of it around here, and that may explain the lack of, enthusiasm or excitement or other such words. So we have done the work we've scheduled today, and it's remarkably about a third of our departments. There are 18 of them, including the governor, court system, the legislature, and I think we did six. And so with that, I thank Mr. Clark. It concludes our business for today, our next House Finance Committee meeting.
Can I get one question for Director Painter?
That's sure. Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Sorry. We've got nothing but time today. Yeah. Director Painter.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. through the chair to Director Painter, I'm just comparing the general fund spend from the subcommittee additions to the CS that was adopted by the committee. So I'm curious, looks like doing back of the napkin math on a DOT, looks like about $118 million total. Curious, how much, what does that get you in permanent fund dividend, Director? $118 million through the chair.
Through the chair.
Director Painter.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. So the Department of Revenue is using 636,000 recipients. So, for every $100 million, that's about $157 per person. So I don't want to try to do the math of 18, but it'd be...
like $160.
Yeah, a bit more than that for $118 million.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. That concludes our business for today. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 9 at 9 a.m. Members will take note that now that subcommittee is over... we will be having often two-a-days, and that's not guaranteed, but you'll see some of that next week. At that meeting, we will continue the House Finance Subcommittee closeouts, and as I said, we will enter a phase of two-a-days and be hearing more member legislation. and other bills that Co-Chairman Foster deemed especially important for us to dispose of one way or the other. All right, we're going to adjourn today's meeting Friday, March 6th, here in Juneau at 2:13 p.m. We're adjourned.